You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert. Here's a question that has been dogging global justice organizers. How do you make U.S. corporations pay for the harm that they do abroad? Human rights advocates spent much of the past 15 years trying to sue oil companies for things like financing violence against protesters. To do it, they used a 234-year-old law called the Alien Tort Statute. The Supreme Court quashed those efforts in 2012 when it ruled the law could not be used to sue a corporation. Our next guest went a different route. He took claims against oil giant Chevron to an Ecuadorian court, where he represented hundreds of villagers who accused the company of poisoning their portion of the Amazon. Ultimately, they won a judgment totaling $9.5 billion. The problem? How to collect. Chevron has filed its own claims against Stephen Donziger in a U.S. court, alleging he bribed a judge in Ecuador, tampered with evidence, and compromised expert testimony. And so far, it has blocked him from collecting dollar one. We have already discussed what this means for oil drilling in Ecuador. Now we're going to talk about what it means for corporate accountability in general. Stephen Donziger, welcome.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Start off by describing the case. Lago Agrio, what exactly did you win a judgment in Ecuador for?
Well, the case started, if you can believe it, 20 years ago, and it's a result of the fact that Texaco, which is now owned by Chevron, in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, designed a system of oil extraction to deliberately pollute the rainforest as a way to save on production costs. So it's indisputable that, and even Chevron now admits, that Texaco dumped billions of gallons of toxic waste into the rainforest, into the rivers and streams that the indigenous groups who lived in the region relied on for their drinking water, for fishing and bathing, resulting in an ecological calamity, a humanitarian crisis that's affecting thousands and thousands of people. Cancer rates are sky high in the region as a result of the pollution. And what's new, I think, in terms of the model of getting human rights accountability that the communities in Ecuador have been able to carry forth is suing under basic statutory or common law principles of tort. That is just suing over wrongdoing rather than using the Alien Tort Statute as has historically, or not least for the last couple of decades, been sort of the preferred mechanism among human rights lawyers in the United States. Initially, the case was brought in the United States. Chevron fought for 10 years from 1993 to 2003, 2002 to get it sent to Ecuador, promising to abide by any adverse judgment against them. They succeeded. We got down to Ecuador. They tried to sabotage the trial, and it took 8 years to complete, but the communities ended up with an historic victory. They won this $9.5 billion judgment. And just to correct something you said in the opening, it wasn't the U.S. court decision that's blocking collection of money. I mean, Chevron is blocking collection of money by refusing to pay what we believe is a valid and legitimate judgment of an Ecuadorian court in the forum where they wanted the trial to be held. So as a result, the communities with other counsel, not myself, are in other countries now pursuing Chevron assets. They're in Canada, Brazil, and Argentina. And those processes are underway. And in our opinion, they're not affected in the slightest by what this United States federal judge did to me in this country, which we think is completely unjust and without legal basis.
Basically, the judge here ruled that you procured your verdict in Ecuador fraudulently. And one can imagine lawyers for Chevron in all those other countries going into a courtroom and saying, look, these issues have been tried in the United States. It has one of the most robust judicial systems in the world, and they've already been disposed of by a judge here. Are you really going to second-guess those findings?
Well, I think the findings of the federal judge. I mean, look, I don't take criticism of federal judge lightly. I'm an American lawyer, but I think they're preposterous for various reasons. Number one is the only thing that Chevron alleged that was really problematic is the judge in Ecuador was bribed. That is based on testimony from a former Ecuadorian judge to whom Chevron paid $350,000 and who's made up multiple stories depending on different forensic evidences that have come in to discredit his prior versions. I think his testimony is completely not credible. Unfortunately, the judge Lewis Kaplan, credited it, but we trust the appellate process. And we believe ultimately, for various reasons, it'll be overturned. They tried to use, for example, the RICO, the racketeering statute, to claim the entire Ecuador case, which has been going on for 20 years, with some sort of extortion scheme against Chevron. We reject that completely, but the judge found that based on what we believe is corrupt evidence, and we're going to trust the appellate process to overturn it. The larger issue, though, is the communities, regardless of what this American judge says, are going forward with their enforcement actions against Chevron assets in other countries, where we believe unbiased judges are going to make the final determination as to whether or not the Ecuadorian judgment is going to be enforced or not. And I will say this, every single allegation Chevron has made against me and my colleagues who litigated the case has been reviewed by two different appellate courts in Ecuador and rejected unanimously, including one that conducted a de novo review of the trial court judgment. So the fact that Chevron lost fair and square in Ecuador and then tried to concoct this racketeering claim back in the United States, I think reflects the company's desperation. There's also a larger issue that doesn't concern me. It really concerns civil society in America. Judge Kaplan has ruled that anyone who helps the Ecuadorian communities with things like press releases, blogs, engaging in public officials, lobbying, is somehow involved in a criminal extortionate scheme. Well, that's just basic advocacy. It's fighting for justice. It's fighting to hold corporations accountable. And I think his decision reflects a larger pushback by corporate America to punish those who speak out, to punish activists and human rights lawyers for having the audacity to actually carry forth with this case for now 20 years to hold them accountable. And make no mistake about it, the communities in Ecuador have won this case. The only issue now is collection, and we believe that multiple countries, including Canada, where we're quite far along, are going to be willing to enforce the Ecuadorian judgment against Chevron's assets in those countries. And I think in the end of the day, despite the propaganda that Chevron has put out about Judge Kaplan's decision, I think in the end of the day, Chevron is going to pay 100 cents on the dollar on this decision, on this judgment.
If the decision is as weak as you say, what incentive would Judge Kaplan have for making findings on such weak evidence?
Well, that's the ultimate question I ponder constantly. I mean, the reality is Judge Kaplan, I believe, had a preconceived notion of this case from the beginning. I think if you look at an animating principle in his rulings over the years, he's always protecting corporations from activists or from the government. I think deep down he's a libertarian activist judge. And I think he hated the idea that a little country like Ecuador could use its judicial system in a fair way to hold a giant, prestigious American company like Chevron accountable under the law in a case of this magnitude. And I think he felt he had to intervene to correct what he thought was a mistake of history or something. I mean, if you look at the history of this case, it was Chevron who wanted the case in Ecuador, you know, Texaco and then Chevron. They were begging U.S. courts to send it to Ecuador over the objections of the communities. Why? Because they felt that we would, as the lawyers, would either disappear at that point, because who would go down to Ecuador and litigate for another 10 years when you know very little about the legal system, you have to hire local counsel, it's complicated, it's expensive. Or they thought they could just control Ecuador politically and engineer the outcome that they desire, because that was their historical experience in Ecuador for 30 years. I mean, it's indisputable they dumped billions of gallons of toxic waste while they were there from 1964 to 1992. There was not a single judgment in tort for even $1 against Texaco during those years for those who had been harmed. People didn't even feel like they had access to their own court system to hold them accountable. So they thought by getting it back to Ecuador, it would just go away or they could automatically win, and it didn't happen because the communities banded together. They fought on. We were able to get support from all over the world to continue the case. Chevron tried to inundate the court with paper. They threatened judges with jail time if they didn't rule in their favor. They actually tried to corrupt the process in Ecuador. And I find it high irony that they've come back to the United States accusing our team of corruption, because that's what they did. They tried to corrupt the process. The Ecuadorian court, their preferred form, found that. Yet they come back to a judge who unfortunately evidenced bias for years against us, had an agenda. I'll say this. For 3 years, they've been banging on me personally trying to make me the principal target. They've hired Kroll. They've surveilled me. They've spied on me. I believe they're hacking into my email. You know, just the other day in San Francisco, people were taking photographs of me on the street. It's about intimidation. And I think this entire lawsuit in the United States is a slap lawsuit. I think it is designed to intimidate people. As part of this lawsuit...
SLAP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation.
Exactly.
And something you file to run up the litigation tab of the other party, not with any expectation of winning.
Exactly. I mean, the idea of a slap lawsuit is just to make it happen. I mean, you don't even care if you win or lose, but what it does is it sucks your resources out when you're a critic of something, some wrongdoing, as is the case with me and my colleagues. It's completely distracting, and we've spent the last 3 years dealing with this, and Chevron has used 114 lawyers from Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher in the RICO case. Okay, they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars. We hardly have any money, but we've hung in there, and at the end of the day, you know, we expected this decision because of the track record of this judge. They dropped $60 billion in damages claims against me personally, which, by the way, would have been the largest personal liability in U.S. history. I live in a two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan. They sued me for treble damages on the $19 billion judgment. On the eve of trial, they got so panicked, they so little believed in their own evidence, they dropped 100% of damages claims against me just to avoid a jury, because under the American system of laws, if you don't sue for money, you don't get a jury. The defendant is not entitled to a jury. So that enabled Judge Kaplan, who had shown proclivities in favor for Chevron for 3 years, to rule alone. But as a result of that, there's just deep, we believe, fatal flaws to this case, both legally and factually. You know, we believe this judge's testimony was just made up and corrupt. I did not bribe anybody. I would not bribe anybody. It's not what I do. I have a 20-year track record. I've never had even an ethical complaint filed against me as a lawyer, much less one that's been, you know, been proven. So, you know, we believe in the end of the day, Kaplan's decision is going to get overturned. But the larger issue is it doesn't matter because foreign courts are ultimately going to decide whether the Ecuadorian judgment is going to be enforced. You cannot have a New York trial judge try to serve as the Supreme Court to the world. I mean, Judge Kaplan, through this decision, is essentially trying to overturn a decision on Ecuadorian law already made by Ecuador's Supreme Court. It makes no sense. It would never hold up. Can you imagine if an Ecuadorian judge tried to overturn a U.S. Supreme Court decision? It would be laughed at. This country would be furious.
So how much progress have your client's attorneys made in other jurisdictions?
Well, in Canada, you know, look, Chevron's fundamental strategy is a blocking action. They just try to block us, wear us down, and kick the can down the road because it's cheaper to pay lawyers than it is to pay for a cleanup of a massive environmental catastrophe. So in Canada, we filed an enforcement action in May of 2012. So we're now in 2014. We just got an appellate court decision saying the trial on the enforcement action can go forward in Canada. But Chevron appealed that to the Supreme Court on very narrow jurisdictional grounds, and we're waiting for the Supreme Court of Canada to decide whether they're going to take Chevron's appeal. So ultimately, Chevron spends its, you know, massive amounts of money on multiple law firms all over the world to just litigate, because it's cheaper than paying for a cleanup. And there's other power dynamics at play. They just hate the idea, in my mind, of having to write checks to indigenous groups so they can clean up their ancestral lands. I think that would be a terrible precedent for their business because they have legacy environmental issues all over the world. So Canada, we believe if things fall our way within a few months, we can be in trial and enforcement action. Chevron has about $15 billion worth of assets in that country. And if the communities from Ecuador are successful in that country, they will collect 100 cents on the dollar. But, of course, Chevron seems to want to fight this until the bitter end. And also in Brazil, there's a case moving along. And in Argentina as well, we had an embargo on assets of Chevron subsidiaries that were held in a court account for a while. But Chevron, in our opinion, engaged in political interference. They got the Attorney General of Argentina to intervene in exchange for a $1.5 billion investment in a new oil field, and the Supreme Court blocked the embargo, but the recognition action on the judgment is still alive or going to be filed down there. So there's multiple places. I mean, Chevron's problem from a global standpoint is they're in over 100 countries. They get 75% of their revenue from their subsidiaries outside the United States. Most of the money they make comes from other countries. So the Ecuadorian communities have the option to file in any of a dozens of countries to try to get assets that can satisfy the Ecuadorian judgment. You know, this is just the normal legal process of what you do when there's a judgment against someone and they refuse to pay. So, you know, the Ecuadorian communities are the ones following the rule of law. In our opinion, Chevron's running from the rule of law because they won't pay a valid judgment that we procured in Ecuador.
So here's the problem. If we stipulate that everything you say about Chevron's arguments is true, it's still 20 years and counting. You've had clients die of cancer waiting for this thing to sort itself out. And there's no money, no justice to show for it yet. Does it make you question the viability of going to the courts for justice in a case like this?
Well, it raises profound questions. First of all, it's a travesty of justice that it takes 20 years and a case is not even resolved. One way or another, it is a travesty. And it's a very sad commentary on our system of laws, both in this country and in other countries. But what happens, and I went to law school 25 years ago now. You know, I have always been keenly attuned to the limitations of our legal system. I mean, one of the things we have tried to do, or the communities have tried to do, is ally with NGOs and have a multi-pronged advocacy campaign that doesn't just rely on what happens in court, like groups like Amazon Watch, Rainforest Action Network, the Sierra Club. There were 43 NGOs in the United States that just signed a letter criticizing Chevron's abuse of the RICO statute to try to intimidate human rights lawyers and their allies. So there's a lot of support swelling up for the Ecuadorian communities in the United States and in other countries. But Chevron is very powerful. It's a company that makes $250 billion a year generally in revenue every year. Their annual revenue is several times the gross domestic product of the entire country of Ecuador. They throw money around like there's no tomorrow. I mean, we believe they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year in this case, which frankly, even though it seems like a lot of money, isn't that much money to a company that's making that much money per year. And ultimately, they're able to abuse the civil justice system, in our opinion, in such a way as to prolong the agony of the communities who have now suffered for decades because of pollution that nobody disputes.
I mean, ultimately, with what they've spent and the amount of time they have drawn this out, they have sent a message to any attorney who would follow in your footsteps that it would be folly.
Well, look, if you're going to sue one of the principal lawyers for billions of dollars after that person has worked many, many years and dedicated a good part of his professional life to this one case, to getting justice for these communities, what kind of message are they trying to send? You know, and the case as a result has larger resonances. Every oil company, every big gas company, every big mining company, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to whom Chevron contributes massive sums of money every year, the entire sort of hard sector of the corporate business community is backing Chevron because they want to use this as a test case to try to scare the heck out of any young lawyer or any young activist that wants to join a campaign like this and fight it for many years at this degree of magnitude. You know, if the communities in Ecuador said, oh, you know, this isn't that big a case, we'll do a little cleanup of this pit and that pit and it'll be maybe $5 million, they wouldn't be doing this, okay? But given that this is a multi-billion dollar case, that the damage is far, far worse than what BP caused in the Gulf. And if you notice, BP's liability is now almost approaching $40 billion. This is a $9.5 billion liability. In our opinion, Chevron's getting off easy relative to the magnitude of the damage. The problem is Chevron, I think, has a double standard. They treat people in Ecuador far worse in terms of the value of their lives than they would people in the United States had they had this kind of thing happen in the United States. I mean, look at how quickly BP stepped up in the United States after the Gulf spill, you know, with all the pressure on them. But in Ecuador, this has been going on since the mid-1960s, going on decade after decade. It's been almost a half century. You know, hundreds, if not thousands, of people have died of various diseases. We have an expert report that 9,000 people will die in Ecuador of cancer in the coming years if there's no cleanup. In Ecuador, it's ignored, okay, for the most part by Chevron. Or they spend massive sums of money to beat back the legitimate cries of the communities for some sort of relief, and they try to make the lawyers the issue. It is a classic corporate shell game. Don't deal with the merits. Try to win by might what you can't win by merit. In this case, they already lost the case, and distract attention by attacking the lawyers, and that serves as a general deterrent effect to the human rights community that you should not take on big oil companies in this kind of case.
I'm curious about your thoughts on the impact in Ecuador. This trial, because it took place in Ecuador, dominated headlines there for years. It has become highly convenient lately for Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa to beat up on Chevron publicly. Convenient because they don't do any business in the country. There's no real backlash from that. However, he's also more quietly been greenlighting oil drilling inside the Yasuni Biosphere Reserve, one of the most biodiverse places on Earth. It doesn't sound like Ecuador's government has learned any lessons about drilling in the rainforest.
Well, let me say this. I mean, for starters, our case is a private case. The government of Ecuador is not a party. What's really happened...
But you hope to have an impact beyond just the damages from Chevron.
Well, look, you know, our immediate duty as lawyers is to get relief for our clients in this one case. You know,
But you're not just waging a legal battle. You're working with the NGOs you described to wage a public campaign.
Well, there is a public aspect to the campaign, and I think the communities would tell you if they were here today that they want to establish the principle that all people all over the world should be treated equally by oil companies. You shouldn't dump in one place and not in another just because you think you can get away with it, or just because the people are indigenous or brown-skinned, or there's a lack of government regulation. And so, yes, there is a larger principle involved here that is that the communities hope to establish. But the main thing they want is funds to clean up their ancestral lands. Chevron made a ton of money in Ecuador, billions of dollars. That money, some of that has been used for future investments. Some of that has been used as dividends to distribute to shareholders. They want that money back. A lot of that money is blood money that came out of Ecuador, that came out of the pockets of these communities, and they want that money back so their communities can be made whole and their lands can be cleaned up and their forests can be restored and their traditional lifestyles, to the extent possible, can resume. Now, in terms of the government of Ecuador, you know, the relationship between the communities and the government has been a complicated one through the years. You know, the government was a partner with Texaco when this pollution occurred, even though Texaco was the operator and made all the decisions to pollute. The government of Ecuador benefited from that at the expense of their own people. Ultimately, this particular government, headed by Rafael Correa, is the first president since I've been involved in this case, and I've seen 10 different presidents since the early 1990s, who's openly cared about his own citizens who live in this region who have been victimized by the pollution. He has not interfered in the case. Chevron's built a whole fake narrative around his role and the fact he's expressed sympathy, just like President Obama did, for example, to victims of the BP spill in the Gulf. But his decisions about the Yasuni, the oil policy of Ecuador in general, is very, very controversial. And it's you know, I sort of get it. I mean, the government is trying to get as much revenue as possible to invest in education and invest in health care and try to help the plight of the people, particularly the lowest income people in Ecuador. But on the other hand, it's impossible in my mind to drill in the Amazon region in this delicate ecosystem without causing grievous harm, just like Texaco did. Now, obviously, most companies subsequent to that have improved their production practices. They don't deliberately dump, but it's almost impossible to drill for oil in this region without causing harm to the environment.
At a minimum, you're going to be cutting lots of roads through the forest, clearing forest for oil drilling platforms.
That's exactly right.
You're going to be venting gases and flaring.
That's exactly right. You're going to be disrupting the forest, which is where animals, plants, you know, the indigenous groups roam and live off the forest. And even though, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about sort of how the groups operate, but these groups generally do not have any money in the Western sense of the world, but they lead historically very prosperous and rich lives off the forest. And when you take away the forest, you take away their culture, you take away what they need to survive. And in this case, you know, they've been out in the forest for millennia. Texaco came in the 1960s, in 20 years, in two decades. They pretty much ended up polluting so much that indigenous groups were decimated forever. Now, a lot of these groups think they can come back if they can restore the forest and get the land and water cleaned up. But even if the money becomes available, as we hope it will, it's going to take many, many years to do the work necessary to do the remediation. And in the meantime, lots of people have suffered and many people have died.
Stephen Donziger, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stephen Donziger is an attorney who represents thousands of Amazonian villagers who are trying to collect on a multi-billion-dollar judgment against oil giant Chevron in an Ecuadorian court. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert.